Is it because our work's been shoddy? He was interrupted by angry denials. They shouted at one another, jumped to their feet. The mayor shook his fist in Sparrowhawk's face. Another drew a knife. Their mood had gone wild. Aaron was on his feet at once. He looked at Sparrowhawk, expecting to see him stand up in the sudden radiance of the mage light and strike them dumb with his revealed power. But he did not. He sat there and looked from one to another and listened to their menaces, and gradually they fell quiet as if they could not keep up anger any more than they could keep up merriment. The knife was sheathed. The threats turned to sneers. They began to go off like dogs leaving a dogfight, some strutting and some sneaking. When the two were left alone, Sparrowhawk got up, went inside the inn, and took a long draught of water from the jug beside the door. "Come, lad," he said. "I've had enough of this. To the boat?" "Aye." He put down 2 trade counters of silver on the windowsill to pay for their lodging, and hoisted up their light pack of clothing. Aaron was tired and sleepy, but he looked around the room of the inn, stuffy and bleak, and all aflitter up in the rafters with the restless bats. He thought of last night in that room and followed Sparrowhawk willingly. He thought, too, as they went down Sosara's one dark street, that going now they would give the madman Sopley the slip. But when they came to the harbor, he was waiting for them on the pier. "There you are," said the mage. "Get aboard if you want to come." Without a word, Sopley got down into the boat and crouched beside the mast, like a big, unkempt dog. At this, Aaron rebelled. "My lord," he said. Sparrowhawk turned. They stood face to face on the pier above the boat. "They are all mad on this island, but I thought you were not. Why do you take him?"
"As a guide."
"A guide? To more madness? To death by drowning or a knife in the back?"
"To death. But by what road I do not know."
Aaron spoke with heat, and though Sparrowhawk answered quietly, there was something of a fierce note in his voice. He was not used to being questioned. But ever since Aaron had tried to protect him from the madman on the road that afternoon, and had seen how vain and unneeded his protection was, he had felt a bitterness, and all that uprush of devotion he had felt in the morning was spoilt and wasted. He was unable to protect Sparrowhawk. He was not permitted to make any decisions. He was unable, or was not permitted, even to understand the nature of their quest. He was merely dragged along on it, useless as a child. But he was not a child. "I would not quarrel with you, my lord," he said as coldly as he could. "But this is beyond reason."
"It is beyond all reason. We go where reason will not take us. Will you come, or will you not?"
Tears of anger sprang into Aaron's eyes. "I said I would come with you and serve you. I do not break my word."
"That is well," the mage said grimly, and made as if to turn away. Then he faced Aaron again. "I need you, Aaron, and you need me. For I will tell you now that I believe this way we go is yours to follow, not out of obedience or loyalty to me, but because it was yours to follow before you ever saw me, before you ever set foot on Roke, before you sailed from Enlad. You cannot turn back from it." His voice had not softened. Aaron answered him as grimly, "How should I turn back? With no boat, here on the edge of the world. This, the edge of the world? No. That is farther on. We may yet come to it."
Aaron nodded once and swung down into the boat. Sparrowhawk loosed the line and spoke a light wind into the sail.
Once away from the looming, empty docks of Lorbenary, the air blew cool and clean out of the dark north, and the moon broke silver from the sleek sea before them and rode upon their left as they turned southward to coast the isle. The madman, the dyer of Lorbenary, sat huddled up against the mast, his arms wrapped around his knees and his head hunched down. His mass of wiry hair looked black in the moonlight. Sparrowhawk had rolled himself up in a blanket and gone to sleep in the stern of the boat. Neither of them stirred. Arryn sat up in the prow. He had sworn to himself to watch all night. If the mage chose to assume that their lunatic passenger would not assault him or Arryn in the night, that was all very well for him. Arryn, however, would make his own assumptions and undertake his own responsibilities. But the night was very long and very calm. The moonlight poured down, changeless. Huddled by the mast, Sopley snored, long, soft snores. Softly the boat moved onward. Softly Arryn slid into sleep. He started awake once and saw the moon scarcely higher. He abandoned his self-righteous guardianship, made himself comfortable, and went to sleep. He dreamt again, as he seemed always to do on this voyage, and at first the dreams were fragmentary, but strangely sweet and reassuring. In place of